Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours Blog Talk Radio. I am G.L. Ross, your host. Today's guest is Luke Ahern, author of Transition, Book 3 in the Euphoria Z series, an a post-apocalyptic thriller. Welcome, Luke. How are you today?
I'm great. Nice to be here.
Well, good. Tell us, where are you? Where is home for you?
I live in Monterey Bay, which is about 2 hours south of San Francisco, and it's really beautiful. I'm actually in my truck right now looking out at the bay. We have some giant forest fires just south of us, and the smoke is so bad, people are coming out to the ocean and trying to find places where the air is fresh.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Wow. Yeah, because I remember being near the L.A. area one time when there was a fire going on, and the smoke, you just have no way of comprehending how bad it is till you're actually standing there in it.
Yeah.
Well, you're smart to go near the ocean and get the ocean breeze, try and give you some fresh air.
Yeah, it's playing havoc on me. So if I cough and sniffle and clear my throat a lot, I apologize.
Oh, well, gracious, no, I completely understand. Well, when you are in Monterey and you don't have the forest fires, what's some of the things you like to do in your free time there?
Well, we have two little dogs, and my wife and I work at home. We're pretty busy, so we try to get out when we can. We like to go down to Big Sur and see the big redwoods, and that's been very inspirational. It's in a lot of my books. And it feels like you're on Skull Island with these giant trees and the mist and everything. It's really awesome. And we spend a lot of time looking at the ocean and the bay, and try to get out on the beach once in a while to walk around. It's for anyone who lives in Florida or the South, this isn't like the sugar sand and the bathtub water. This is, you know, pretty cold.
Sure.
Really rough sand and rocks on the shore, but it's really nice to build a fire and watch the sunset and do that kind of thing.
You sound like you have a little bit of a romantic side, even though you write these thrillers.
Yeah, actually, a lot of the the violence or the zombies or all that stuff, it's all props and dressing, and they're more tools. They're not really substance to me. And I'm actually probably more focused on the healing power of love, or people, how people can be redeemed. There's a lot of people out there, and I've met them, who are just bad people, and you got to stay away from them. And that's one thing I think I've learned as I've gotten older, is how to distinguish between a person who's just bad and anything you do, they just use against you. And then there's a lot of people who are just raised poorly, or they've had traumatic experiences, so they're afraid of certain types of people. And those are the people who you can reach out to and usually redeem them and have a good relationship with them. And so I don't mean to ramble, but I guess that to me is an important thing.
No, I think that's interesting. Do you have, in your education, do you have like a psychology background somewhere? Because you sound like you've studied the human psyche quite a bit.
No. Well, it's a long story. I was basically told I was retarded as a child. And, you know, nowadays they don't use that word, but back then
right.
I was retarded or slow. And and the reason I had a big family down south in New Orleans, and I was kind of left on my own. It's called benign neglect. So I read a lot, and that's what really rescued me from a lot of depression or drugs or whatever escape. Reading was my escape. Like, I think a lot of people, it's their escape.
Yes.
So I just read voraciously. And I'd stay up all night and read. And then I would sleep during the day in class. Or I was so tired, my eyes would go cross. And, and I wouldn't pay attention. I'd just stare out the window. So they diagnosed me. They had me tested, found out I was really intelligent, but then they just shoved me back in and didn't do anything different. And it wasn't until I met my wife when I was 18 or so that she's the first one to really point it out. Well, obviously you're intelligent if you could sit there and ignore school and sleep through class and still get C's and B's. And,
right.
So I'm pretty much, I guess, self-educated, because once I realized I could learn anything I wanted, I went on a seven-year binge of, I just went to college for 7 years and just changed my major every semester and just learned as much as I could. And part of it was psychology. I learned a lot about what I hated during that time.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah,
I don't mean to be too long-winded, but.
No, you're not at all. You're very interesting. That's one thing I did when I was in college is I started out, you know, different majors and would end up taking psychology classes just because I loved the insight into myself. I mean, you can learn so much, but I think you'll find that true with a lot of writers, is that we like to study psychology and then turn it around into characters in our books. Well, talking about your book, this is book three in the series. For those who are not familiar with the series, please tell everyone kind of what the series is about and then give us a little bit of a synopsis of book three.
Well, the series is called Euphoria Z, and it's about a virus that at first people think is a virus. It infects people and have all kind of really terrible symptoms. And part of this came from growing up and getting sick a couple of times really bad and thinking about having these symptoms that just make you feel so terrible. You know, you sweat, the fever, the weakness, all that stuff. And for some reason, I always thought, what if you got sick and the symptoms were really bad, but you felt really happy and you didn't know you were sick or you didn't care because you felt so good? And
right.
I thought, what if that was something that they engineered and this plot in my mind developed that you'd have to read the book. I don't want to give it away, but it's completely awesome. And no, I'm just joking. But it's euphoria. You know, it makes people are getting really, really sick, and a handful of people are smart enough to know this is not good. This is a disease or a sickness or something, and they shelter themselves inside. They stay away from everyone. So there's several thousand people worldwide that are still alive, and but it's just, and it's also a little. What's the word I'm looking for? I was inspired by growing up in New Orleans, going to Mardi Gras, and just seeing how crazy, you know, how crazy it can be when there's thousands of people
right.
who are euphoric and drunk and partying and pulling half their clothes off, but nobody's getting hurt. They're not, you know, people in New Orleans have a mentality. They kind of know how to be in a crowd and go crazy. But Euphoria Z, people are getting hurt. There's no restraint. There's no restraint to anything, so people are dying and getting hurt. And so I think one of the big mistakes I made in the whole series was the zombies start to disappear. And I like to – it's a spoiler, but I have to tell people because I think a lot of people are disappointed because they want to keep reading about perpetual zombie attacks, and they disappear in the second book. And they're replaced by something worse, but I needed to – I think that was a mistake I made by having them disappear. Did I answer your question or did I ramble off topic?
No, you did great. You did great. So tell me a little bit about Cooper and Lisa.
Well, Cooper, excuse me, when my daughter went to college, I had a hard time. My oldest child kind of had a hard time. I didn't realize how much I missed her. It was a trouble. So when my son went off to college 2 years later, I was determined to handle it better and stay in touch with him. And I started writing this book, and I based the character on him a little, and it made me feel more in touch with him. And so that was hard at first because I made it too much him, and the first beta readers commented that for the first 5 chapters he did nothing but walk around. And I didn't even realize that subconsciously I was protecting my son. And I read it and thought, oh, my God, nothing happens. He just walks around doing nothing. And I can't believe I wrote that. So I had to go back. I had to think about it for like 2 weeks and think, okay, he's not really Cooper. Still use his name. Still based on him. But I've got to make him, you know, I've got to put him in trouble. So I went back and rewrote it and dumped all kind of crap on the character like he's supposed to do as a writer. And and Lisa, she's controversial because a lot of negative reviews I got, people were really upset and thought I was trashing fat people. And it's like, no, I'm fat. And People are always saying, how come it's only skinny, good-looking people that survive the apocalypse? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to have a diverse cast. It's not all white women and men who survive the apocalypse. I have, you know, black people. I have just different people from all walks of life. And I knew when I wrote it, I'm going to get some haters, and I did. But I have a lot of people who really appreciate the fact that, you know, one of the struggles is the guy has a mental condition. He runs out of medicine. One of them is Lisa. She's extremely heavy, but she's smart, and she meets these people who are really good. Cooper meets her and helps her, and she makes it through the apocalypse. And she's fat, and there's some humor surrounding it because I'm fat too, and I know what it's like to be very heavy and be on a backpacking trip with my brother and his friends who can, you know, walk uphill for 4 hours with 40 pounds of crap on their back, and I'm struggling along trying to get out of the parking lot, and it's like,
Yeah, and
so a lot of people were really upset at that. It's like, no, I'm not making fun of her. I'm using humor, but she is a hero, a heroine. She survived, and she meets up with people who put themselves on the line to help her because she needs it, and she has a lot to offer, too. She may not be physically fit, but she has a lot of to offer that helps the survival of the group, you know? And I don't know. So that's the long and the short of them.
No, that relates to me. That sounds very interesting, and I can understand where you're coming from with the challenges of trying to survive the apocalypse and not being in the best physically fit condition as you could possibly be. So I as a writer, I think that's an interesting point. Do you have a favorite scene in the book, in the third book, that you would like to share or tell the audience about?
Oh, man, I don't know, because I'll think of one, and then I'll remember another. And if I skim through the book, I would think, oh, wow, I forgot I wrote that.
Right.
I don't know. There's a lot of really interesting – I don't know. I hope it doesn't sound egotistical, but I enjoy writing so much. To me, it's like I'm reading or writing or watching a movie. I can just sit for hours and just go through the process of writing because it's not a labor to me. I feel like I'm – watching this happen, and I'm trying to just take notes, and so all of it's kind of really cool. I feel like it comes out of my subconscious. I don't really feel like it's I feel like it's something I can help people or teach them to do. It's not something I feel like is a unique gift of mine, and that's another big topic I'm really passionate about, is I really hate all the negative words surrounding writing, like rejection and writer's block. All those things are so negative. And if you start using them, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I feel like, you know, you don't have to experience or accept those things. They're actually not real. They're not part of writing.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you mentioned that, and I noticed that you wrote a book that was writer's block book or whatever. What made you write that then, if that's not something that you've ever suffered from, or have you, or were you just trying to show people that it really doesn't exist?
Well, I've never suffered from it, and as I grew up, and, you know, when you're little, you say a lot of stuff in your 20s, 30s, even your 50s.
Right.
You start to say stuff, and you realize you're offending people who have that challenge, and it's like I never realized people really struggled with it, and I would spout on and on about how I love writing, and people would get offended or pissed off or tired of hearing me talk about it, and I thought, you know, finally somebody confronted me and said, I'm really tired of hearing you talk about it, and I said, well... I said, but the thing is it's not like I'm bragging about how great I am. I feel like I understand the thought process and the way that you need to work to not have writer's block. It's not a unique talent that I have. I feel like it's just a unique way of thinking about things. So I started writing blog postings because I really want to help people. I really want people to write freely and not have writer's block. And I feel like when you read a bunch of crap on the internet about how bad writer's block is and how rejection is going to be there, I feel like you don't need to read that. You don't need to accept it. You're better off working past it and finding the joy and the expression in your writing, not accepting that, not building up something in your head as a real block, which is not even there. It's not a real block, but learning how to not have to deal with that. Don't you think it's more preferable to not have to deal with it than to create it and then try to deal with it? You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I wrote the book, it's a collection of articles and postings I've done because I really want to help people. It's like, you don't need to suffer with that. You don't need to be highly creative. You don't need to be highly intelligent. You just need to think about things in a certain way and to keep progressing forward. You know, people get hung up.
Well, now, how long have you been writing, Luke? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I need to be interrupted. I'll never stop talking.
No.
I remember closing The Hobbit when I was 10 years old, thinking I love that experience so much. I want to be a writer. I wonder if I can do that. And I thought I could. And I didn't start writing in earnest until I was about 19 or 20. And we were talking about psychology and the psyche.
Yes.
One of the first novels I started was a book called Radical Therapy, based on the behavioralism of the 60s and 70s, you know, and some of the terrible crap that they did to people.
Right. Yes.
And I started that book, and I've gone back to it 5 or 6 times over the last few decades. And just recently in the last month, I've really put a lot of effort into finishing it up, rewriting parts of it, tying it up. And that has a lot to do with the human psyche and questions of morality, of manipulation and behavior control. And you know, I forgot your question. I apologize.
I was just asking how long you've been writing. No, your answer is...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah,
I've
been writing for a while. I've started doing nonfiction about 17 years ago. And
okay.
I was a game developer. I really didn't like doing it. But I had become kind of really good at it. It's like all I could do, so I had to do it for a while. So I started trying to think of ideas to get myself away from that. So I started writing to help people. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to teach people, and I wanted to do something that wasn't game development, but obviously used all the stuff I learned in game development. So I wrote books on it. Draw me away from having to be a game developer, and gave me more credibility and more practice as a writer. And
okay.
So that's
because I saw
that's
you wrote
really well
some books, the 3D game textures, and some other books about 3D development. You're also a cover artist, correct?
Yeah. I do a lot of cover art, and I'm promoting that recently. It's fun to do, and I started that to kind of help indie authors, but. It's so competitive. It's like I have to do a little bit of everything. I get too bored doing one thing, and so I'll do a few covers every month, and I have 3D art that's selling, nonfiction books, and a lot of what I do is my wife is a photographer and a videographer, so I do a lot of marketing, interacting with customers for her locally, and
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I'm her assistant on shoots, you know, I carry all the lights and stuff.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool that y'all get to do that together. Does she ever take pictures for you that you use in your cover art?
No. No, we're so different. We love being together. We've been together, like, I think, every day since we met, like, 30 years ago. But we're different in some ways. It's like, you know, she doesn't like zombies, and I understand it. There's stuff I don't like that she's into that... She's like, you know, she likes exercising, and I don't. So.
Well, they say opposites attract.
Yeah.
If other authors out there or aspiring writers who have heard us talking about your cover art, if they wanted to see some of your work, do you have a website where they could go view some of your cover art?
Yes, LukeAhearn.com. I just basically focuses on my cover art. It's just my name, LukeAhearn.com. And, and I talk about the covers and what I do and all that stuff. And there's lots of samples. I haven't updated in a while. There's a whole bunch of art I just constantly do. And I kind of specialize in pirate art. I really love it. So I'm redoing all the graphics for a pirate board game. And that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed when I was researching that you wrote a book that really caught my attention, Unhappily Ever After, A Fairy Tale for Grown-Ups. Now, how
did you
come up about that, and what is that about?
I did not write that. I did the cover art for it. The woman who wrote
it. Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
It's just a fairy tale. It's humorous. I didn't read a lot of it. I had to send me pieces of it that described what she wanted on the cover. and she wanted a cartoon kind of traditional fairy tale look to it, and that's what I gave her.
Uh-huh.
But yeah,
well,
that's an interesting book. A lot of people like.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to go back and look at the cover more now. I glanced at it because I was like, oh, wow, wait a minute. He did that too? So on another book I saw, did you do the cover art or did you write or both on A Pirate's ABC Adventures?
Oh, yeah, I did both on that.
Okay.
And I never pursued it or really promoted it.
Uh-huh. It's as a children's book, I'm assuming. Okay. Because
yeah.
I have to tell you, I love the cover on it, because I write children's books also, and I love the cover on that.
Well, let's get together and work on something.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to do a book for kids, for boys, and I had a publisher
uh-huh.
interested in it, but she said it was too advanced for little kids and too intense. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. When I was a boy who was 4 or 5, I would have loved this. But
yeah.
So I self-published it but didn't really work on it or push it or market it like a lot of things. I kind of do them and push them aside and start something else. And
mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to go back and maybe write more of a story to it, make it for older kids, you know. Because
oh,
there's a lot of good art in the book.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe
well,
we could work
so
on
how
that.
How many books have you written?
I don't know. I've written a few under pseudonyms. All total, I think I've written 11 nonfiction books, and most of those have gone into second, third editions, and one of them is in its fourth edition. And I've written, I don't even know, because I write varied things. I've written about 4 or 5 full-length novels that I've published, but I've written a ton of, like, shorter novels or shorter novellas, things like that. I don't really keep track. I guess I should.
Do you have a favorite?
I should keep track. Whatever I'm working on. Currently, I'm working on a book called The Zone of the Damned, and I really like that one. I'm really into working on it. And
mm-hmm.
it takes place in Northern California, and it's about a geneticist who releases all these genetically altered humans as part of the plot. He was pissed off because the company ousted him when they were about to go public and make a ton of money. So he went to the lab, the secret lab in the middle of the forest, and he was going to steal all their research, but they had already gotten there and cleaned the lab out, but they had left all the creatures in their cages to die. So he let them all out into the wild, and much havoc ensues afterwards. And he has to go back in there and reclaim a part of the computer system. I don't want to give away too much, I guess. But he has to go back
sure.
into the zone that's been cordoned off, like all in Northern California. And he has to go back in there with one of the people who has gotten really good at going into this dangerous zone so they can, you know, get money or help survivors get out and that kind of thing.
Well, obviously
I'm not very
sci-fi
good at selling
is where your
work.
Heart is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So when you...
It is.
When you're reading for your own entertainment, do you read sci-fi? Do you read other sci-fi novelists' work, or do you read something totally different?
I don't know. I kind of read everything because you can get a lot of good from everything, you know?
Sure.
I read a lot of true crime, nonfiction. I try to look over a lot of indie authors' work, just try to be supportive. Some people, though, they have, you know, I don't know. Some writers will put out a 10-page book and charge $10.99 for it, and I don't understand that. There's no way I'm going to buy it. But
sure.
There's a lot of good indie authors out there that I will purchase their books. And I reread a lot of books that I like to try to pick up on language and paragraph structure and dialogue and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. I guess I read a diverse amount of stuff, just books on writing, books on art. And,
well, on the Euphoria Z series, did you do your own cover work?
No, actually, I hired someone. I was too close to the story. And when Severed Press took over my books, they've hired someone. I don't know who it is, but they have done the covers for the past 3 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy with the quality of the work they've done.
Are you allowed to have input?
Yeah, I mean, I could basically tell them what I want on the cover, and I could probably even do it myself, but I really, there's a balance you learn as you get more experienced in writing is when to trust professionals and when to override them and say no.
Sure.
Or, you know, force, you know, in some of my nonfiction books, I've had to draw some really hard lines and not threaten to cancel contracts because I believed in something so much. And I'm always right when it comes to that stuff. So I would, you know, I would have no problem forcing my will on a publisher if they're trying to do something I think is stupid. And the one time that I've relented and let the publisher do what they wanted with the cover of the book, it failed. And they released a second edition just to put a different cover on it, and then it did really well because the cover is that important. And I'm a writer, and I know how hard it is to write a book compared to how hard it is to do a cover. And I'll still tell you the cover is more important initially than the book is because,
oh, I agree.
Especially nowadays, you have to get that attention, you know. But
sure, absolutely. I mean, it's so competitive, and there's so many books, you have to catch the eye immediately, and then you've got to have a good blurb to hook them in
yep.
there.
And then
now,
you have to have a good book to keep them. So.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Do
I just wanted to say one more.
Yeah, no,
I wanted to say one more comment. I'm stepping all over you. I apologize. But
no,
it's
you're
also
not.
Important
go ahead.
To know, like, it's really hard to find good beta readers and editors, and it's really important
yes.
when you have a beta reader telling you, especially if you have, like, two or three people reading and they're all pointing out the same mistakes, you can't be defensive
right.
or take it personally. You have to fix it. And so that's a little harder for me when I'm reading it thinking, oh, well, this is my style or this is important to me or, gee,
right.
I really liked it when I drove a unicycle through the forest or something stupid that I put in there. But then I have
right.
to trust these three people. If they say this is really stupid, you got to take it out. The reader's going to hate it. It's like, okay, I'll cut it out. You're right. And even if I don't agree with them, I always come back. It just makes sense to me. And I am rambling.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No.
You were going to talk about something.
No,
else.
No, and I completely agree with you. I'm going through that right now myself with my beta readers. Your social media sites that you're on, share those with our listeners so that they can try and follow you now and learn more about the Euphoria Z series and other books that you've written.
Gosh, I'm in my truck. I don't have the exact links in front of me, but if you go to my website.
Which ones are you on? I mean, are you on, like, Twitter, Facebook? Which ones are you on? Because I'm sure if they put
Twitter,
in Luke Ahern, they could find you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and I have an Amazon authors page that is pretty up to date with the books that I've written. So if you want to know what books I've written, I'd go to the Amazon authors page for Luke Ahern. And LinkedIn has more of an overall view of what I've done professionally. Facebook has a bunch of random stuff that is probably embarrassing or silly. I don't know. I post a lot. And Twitter, too. I kind of cross-post a lot of my artwork and comments and just whatever. Whatever's on my mind. I try not to spend too much time on it because it's distracting. It's also, to me, depressing and frustrating to read a lot of what's on Facebook. So I've really had to back myself away from it.
Sure.
I always answer email, and I always check my
okay.
messages. I'm always available to people, especially if they need help
okay.
writing or something, yeah.
What is your email address?
Luke@lukeahern.com.
Okay. Now, your Bewitching
easy.
Book tour, you're for the third book in the Euphoria Z series, is goes until August 22nd. And if they go to bewitchingbooktours.com, I know it'll list all the blog stops that you have left. I'm guessing also probably on your Twitter or on your lukeahern.com account they can find those links also. I encourage everybody to go grab a copy of this book. I think, Luke, that you are very gifted. Obviously, sci-fi is your niche, and your success shows it. I really have enjoyed visiting with you today, and I wish you the best of luck with all the smoke there in the air. I hope it clears out for you. And I look forward to reading Euphoria Z. I encourage our listeners to go out there and grab a copy and follow you on your Bewitching Book Tours Radio. It's been my pleasure to have you today, Luke.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Everybody have a blessed day, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.